SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, 15 into hour two. Joe Applebaum joins us, and of course, when Joe took over at NYFA, we talked about the mission and the responsibilities, all of that. To some degree, I'm sure Joe, I don't think made the point at the time, but certainly a lot of the work made a certain degree easier by the efforts of Rick Violette, and talked to Alan Foreman on Monday. Pat Kelly just joined us, and couldn't do all this without a visit to you as well, having worked so closely with Rick. Good morning.
Steve, you with me?
Yeah, we're
okay.
Here, Joe.
Well, it's a sad time for all of us here in New York. And, you know, Rick was just instrumental on the backside. It's not that I couldn't do the work wouldn't exist, right? It's not that he gave me a leg up. It literally wouldn't exist, whether it was Best or workers' comp or the pension fund. It's just amazing, his legacy to the backside.
One of the things we just touched on with Pat is how many issues there were that he confronted, where financial, you know, fiduciary responsibility and organization and you know, coherent approach was necessary, and you know, he actually a perfect example, Joe, of how many different hats horsemen have to wear, the ability to manage a business that size. I mean, these were enormous. This is an enormous business that, you know, that you're managing. It's not, you know, it's not just a question of, you know, some short strokes.
I couldn't agree more, Steve. You know, we, just to give you an example of NYFA, when Rick took over, NYFA was like, you know, teetering on insolvency, and, you know, yeah, most horsemen's organizations don't have a lot of money to go around. Rick put it on the right course. He got additional funding approved in Albany. He ran the budgets in a prudent and businesslike manner. You know, and NYFA is thriving today. We give out just about $2 million a year in benevolence and scholarships and education and healthcare grants on the backside. $2 million a year, that's, you know, that's significant money, and we do that on budget. We do it in, as you said, a fiduciary manner, and it is, it's a testament to him over those 25 years. He righted the ship, and he did that more than with just NYFA. You know, he was there in the negotiations during the NYRA bankruptcy, when there were large debts owed to the horsemen. He made sure those got paid, but he did it in a way that didn't harm the franchise. And that's not so easy. And he did it with Best, and, you know, his fiduciary responsibilities and his ability there belies the notion that he was just a trainer, if you want to look at it that way.
We think of him from the New York perspective, but you know, he also the involvement on a nationwide basis between the THA and the responsibilities that came in, you know, basically representing a jurisdiction as important as New York, you know, when it came to having to push back against the Lasix histrionics, Rick was invaluable and resolute.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, I think more than anything, he demanded a seat at the table for the horsemen. The horsemen are the practitioners, were the guys paying the vast majority of the bills, whether it's the trainers or the owners. And I think his basic thought was, you know, we need to be at the table. We don't want to be stuck at the little kids' table. That would be actually a quote from Rick. We're the guys on the ground, and it's our money at stake, and we should be there in the room helping to make decisions. And he was resolute on that. And I think with Lasix in particular, Rick's feeling was, this is what the veterinarians are telling us. This is what the best science is today. And, you know, why are we making decisions based on people's opinion and not on the science? And, you know, he was very strong in that.
What, from your observation, I should have asked this of Pat, who obviously watched him operate for 25 years, but what strikes you about how Rick got what he wanted and what was needed when it came to, you know, the negotiation or being able to to gain agreement?
I would say it's two things, and it's probably just really two ways of saying the same thing. One, he's incredibly tenacious. Right, he would not stop. He would not care. He, when he saw that he thought something was right, or he thought something was deserved or earned, he was not going to stop. Number one. Number two, he was all in. Like Rick, this was what he did. This is what he thought about 24/7. This is what he did. Like he wasn't going to the ball game on Sunday afternoons. He was in his office roaming the back stretch or at the track. So, you know, when us mere mortals have other pursuits and other interests, he didn't. He was really focused on this 24/7.
It did not take. Did not take any compensation for the work.
No, in fact, as I'm learning, this is a full-time job that doesn't pay.
Yes, exactly.
So, and he, you know, you can't imagine the number of hours Rick devoted to the racing game, and I'm not talking about training his own horses. I'm talking about all the other stuff that we do, whether it's checking in on the chaplaincy or negotiating in Albany or flying to a meeting in Kentucky. You know, these are all things he did that benefited all of us, and, you know, mostly people don't recognize it, or, you know, people gripe about it or what have you. And until you're kind of behind the curtain and see what's going on, once I got my nose back there, it was incredibly impressive to see.
Legacy and the things that people didn't see, when they come to Belmont, Saratoga, Aqueduct, as they look around, where should they be able to see Rick Violette?
They sure should. They sure should. You know. You're talking. What should the?
I mean that. Just you know.
There needs to be something. I don't know. I don't want to kind of get out in front of his family. And but, you know, Rick was really tied to those places, having trained at Aqueduct for a long time and Belmont some, and obviously at Saratoga. I was quoted as just Rick seemed ever present right at the gap, you know, with the main track, with his binoculars like slung over his shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, he's just there every morning, and it's just weird that he won't be there, You know, it's a little unsettling.
Well, the legacy that helped so many lives on the backstretch and helped the horsemen and people that will be involved in the game here in New York that you know they may never even know who he was, but for years to come, we'll have Rick Violette to thank.
Everyone who's in the modern horse racing game really owes him a debt, and whether you ever knew him, ever even heard of him, but it would just be so different and not better without him.
Joe, I talked earlier to Pete Fornatel, and we were looking ahead toward next week. You, of course, a BC Betting Challenge winner in 2016. Some anticipation. You're gonna last year. I don't think you played, if I'm not mistaken, right? You
did. No, I played.
You did play. Okay, I wasn't sure.
I didn't do well, but okay. I played. Yeah, I'll be playing again. And it's always exciting time, and I don't know, we're just in the prep phase. It's a little different format this year. I shouldn't say different format. I helped tweak some of the rules this year.
Right.
All Matisse, myself, John Kinchin, worked with the Breeders' Cup, and we tweaked some of the rules. Their schedule has changed, right, with the way they've scheduled the races this year. So that's a bit of that takes a bit of thinking. You know, I like cash tournaments, and the Breeders' Cup's always exciting because you're betting on the best of the best. I think the other thing, I don't know if that yesterday they announced some additional pick fives.
Yes.
And some head-to-head.
Yep.
Matchups, which.
Yep.
I'm very excited about that. That all came out of work that we did, really spearheaded by Craig Burnick. He deserves a tremendous amount of the credit for getting these items and in front of the right people, the Breeders' Cup, and then the staff there, Drew Fleming and Craig, and they took right to it and ran with it.
When you approach the contest and cash money contest in general, Joe, give everybody a little primer on whether it's evolved or you know whether you've got a steady approach for Breeders' Cup money management.
Well, I think at any tournament you have to play, whether it's mythical or cash or whatever the format, right? You have to figure out a strategy of how you're going to win, right? Or I should say this. First, you have to figure out what your goal is, right? Is your goal to actually win the tournament? And that may sound silly, but let's be honest, the 400 entries, not all 400 of the people, while they would like to win the tournament, are going to play to win. So you got to figure out what your personal goal is. Is it to come in the money? Is it to keep your $10,000 and maybe make a little more, right? Or is it to win, right? So that's your first thing you need to figure out. Then once you figure out what your goal is, you need to figure out a strategy to achieve those goals. Because if your strategy is to, let's say, come in the top 40, which put you in the top 10%, which is an amazing finish, you've done a great job, it's a very different strategy than trying to win the whole thing, right? You're going to take less risk, you are going to be more disciplined. And to win the whole thing, you really have to be prepared at some point to put your entire bankroll on the line. And if you're not thinking about how to do that from now, from weeks out, you're not really playing to win. So that is the most important thing to figure out for yourself, right? That's internal.
Yeah.
Rather than picking horses or what race do I bet? Do I try to keep as much money till the last race? And those are all secondary concerns to figuring out what your goals are, what your real goals are, and whether you have the gumption, let's say, to meet those goals, and then adjusting your strategy to do that.
take away the contest portion, how, you know, how do you bet Breeders' Cup before the contest ever came about? How would you typically apply your bankroll?
I am mostly focused on multi-race bets, so pick six, pick five, pick fours mostly. I love to string them together. I love the opportunity to hide opinions within that structure, right, especially beyond the first and second legs. And so that's really my focus. It's hard at the Breeders' Cup to do those things because obviously it's the championships and every horse is good and everyone's trying to win. So, you know, you can make kind of cases and get involved with a lot of horses. But so you have to work on that. It's not easy. But that's kind of always been my focus, probably for the last 15 years, and more so today than ever.
How much, I mean, we know that, you know, you got the $10,000 BCBC parameter. What would be, without that, netting that out, what would be your bankroll total against the 2 days?
Probably another $10,000, something like that. You
so know, 20, 15 to 20.
No, I would say I'll bet $10,000 on. I'll bet $10,000 on the BCBC. Well, I'll start with $10,000 on the BCBC. Hopefully, knock on wood, I'm betting a lot more than that because that'll mean I'm in the
right
game. And then I'll probably bet another $10,000 over the 2 days live. You know, a lot of it depends, especially when I'm playing a contest, playing pick sixes and pick fives. Lightens the intellectual load a little because I'm not looking at every, I need to look at every race for the contest and judge the odds and the payouts, etc. But if I'm trying to do that with live money too, I find it distracting. So I tend to put in my bets, let them ride. If we do great, great. If not, you know, focus on the contest. You know, there's so much added money available in the contest that it makes it, you know, makes a lot of sense just to focus there.
What's your favorite kind of horse to focus on in within, and you know, and of course each race, you know, obviously different with one turns and two turns and turf, etc. But are you somebody that likes to key off of a middle price long shot or a highly reliable type, or is every race an individual approach?
Yeah, I probably play more short-priced horses than your average well-known handicapper, right? I don't try to bomb away, or I typically don't. I'm a bit of a sucker for consistent types, which is probably a weakness to some extent, but, you know, we all can't help our own biases. Yeah, if you're, you know, the ones that run consistently well, I tend to favor, and I tend to play more short-priced horses. I'd rather get more money in on a horse with a better chance to win than necessarily bombing away.
Especially because these races, invariably, there's at least one or two horses in the exotics that is going to be an overlay, and you know, because of the, when we have the big fields, you
right,
also end up with inflated exotics.
We hope so, yes. And I know it doesn't always sound romantic when I say, hey, I like to bet on favorites, but favorites do win more than long shots, number one. And two, remember, I'm at this every day. And while the Breeders' Cup is special and it's a great weekend, and, you know, I'll be back on Monday morning, or Sunday morning, quite frankly, ready to go, where if you are an event bettor, if you're coming out six times a year betting the Kentucky Derby and the Travers and the Jockey Club Gold Cup and then the Breeders' Cup, right, like, so you may want to be more adventurous because you want to get more entertainment bang for your buck. You know, for me, that's, I might not be a great, I might not be a great role model for a lot of people because I'm boring and conservative, and it's not as it's not as fun. And quite frankly, when I was out there, you know, coming out every once a month or every other weekend, I would do the same thing because that's, you know, you want to make sure you're having fun for your money.
Absolutely. Well, looking forward. Are you coming? Are you coming out to Louisville?
I will be there Tuesday speaking at EquestriCon. Then I have another panel at the Owners Conference on Thursday. And I think it's a great time to be there. It's I like how they've done that. I think we should do more of that in our industry, is create these days-long events that can kind of get a lot of people in the same spots. You get a lot of that, Steve, at the sales, right, at the auctions.
Yep.
If you want to have a business meeting, in this, come to the first weekend of Keeneland, and everyone's there. Come to the Phasic sale in Saratoga, everyone's there. But I think we should be building more of that around our big race days. And I think hats off to the Owners Conference folks and Breeders' Cup and EquestriCon for coordinating all that stuff.
Well, and on that topic, you mentioned the sales. I didn't get a chance to talk to you after OBS, but I saw a lot of off-the-hook action.
We like to buy weanlings. We've had a lot of success in the last couple of years buying weanlings. We bought El Deal and Zepesa, both grade one winners in the last, I guess, 18 months or so, as weanlings. And we've had a great amount of success with that. So we've really focused on that. As you well know, I'm highly involved in the New York bred market. We've bred a bunch of horses up here, and I like to support the sales there too. So we bought both Kentucky sired and New York sired New York breds at this sale. I bought an Alpha and I'm assuming I'm pronouncing this correctly, Lauben, but who knows? And we also bought my favorite value sire, Midshipman. And I know we bought one else, but it's slipping from my memory right now. But, we love to support that Phasic sale in October. And we think it's a great time to be in Saratoga. There's some good stock there, and we ship it down to our farm in Ocala and let them grow up. And you'll see all those horses in April of 2020.
Well, and as it happens, the timing on this question, too, appropriate, given the Jockey Club's release of the report on Mare's Bred. What did you make of the 15% drop the second year in a row in New York?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a drop in all the regional markets. If I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me, but I think only one of the regional markets was up this year, where pretty much all the others were down. And this is a continuing trend, a secular trend, still from 2008, that we're still working this out 10 years later. The Kentucky market is solidified. While it's smaller than it used to be, it's kind of operating on its own. The regional markets have suffered even more, or greatly more than the Kentucky market. Why that is, no one really has good analysis of that. I'll give you some of my pet theories, is that we've lost a lot of mid to lower mid-market owners who mm-hmm. would typically support that food chain. So even if they're buying them as two-year-olds or claiming them at the track, but the guys who were throwing in 10,000 each to buy a 25 claimer and have a little left over for bills, four guys doing it at 50,000, like, I don't see those guys at the sales like I used to. And that's anecdotal. I don't have any real evidence of it. But I think that hurts the regional markets, the Florida breds, the New York breds, the Maryland breds, Cal breds, etc., Louisiana breds, because that makes up a ton of those horses, right? And I think that plays out down chain. I think the other thing that we've seen is a rotation out of standing good sires in some of those regional markets. And now the Kentucky farms who have been doing well have been able to bid up some of these sires that let's be honest, are, you know, marginal Kentucky sires, but would be standouts in New York or Louisiana or Florida, et cetera. And, you know, so you don't have some of that firepower here that you used to have. You know, in Florida, you've had exchange rate and Cantharos and some really, really fine stallions go on to Kentucky and have bright careers. New York, we had City Zip who did that, right? And you've seen the development of Freud over the years. And so, you know, rotationally, we're not seeing that anymore. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure why structurally that's happening, but I think that's that and the lack of kind of, let's call them lunch pail owners, even though I know you have to have more than a lunch pail to afford even a $25,000 horse. But those would be my two reasons, and I don't think New York's any different than most of the other regional markets in that respect.
Yeah, and Sid Fernando and I last week, it's funny, that topic kind of came up, and I know from talking to Jeff Canizzo that one of the struggles is, given how commercial New York breeders and New York breeding has become, the fact that so many, you know, are reaching out for Kentucky stallions with an idea of then, you know, the commercial interest and how they sell. I mean, you saw the numbers. We've seen the numbers the last few years in August, but it's hard for the, you know, it's hard for the New York marketplace that stands, you know, the stand stallions.
I think that's right. You know, there's a couple things going on, right? We've lost a lot of breed to race folks over the last few years, right? The commercial market has eaten up more and more and more of the foal crop. And you've seen that play out in pricing in that, well, averages are up at a lot of the sales. The median is not necessarily up. So we're getting a lot of good high-priced horses. But if you don't have exactly what the commercial buyer is looking for, it is, you know, it's hard to sell at a price that makes you money. So for the New York breeder, you know, yeah, there's New York horses you can sell, New York sire horses you can sell, but the conservative play, the more standard play is to get a Kentucky sire, and, you know, they think they're going to be better right now. So, well, I don't know if that's true or not. You know, that's the way people are thinking. So, you know, sometimes perception is the reality, and, you know, I think we could use a few things. We could use more people who are breeding to race, so not as much of the foal crop is for sale, because that takes a lot of pressure off people. And, you know, we could probably use an influx of some more sire power in the regional markets.
The challenge there, of course, is that the minute
you
they
gotta get someone to pay the study.
Well, and, yeah, and it's hard. We certainly this year we're going to see some opportunity, and you know, you see the nice start that Central Banker is off to, and is competing, you know, on the general sire list as well as regionally. And so there's, you know, Maryland, certainly,
well,
Pennsylvania.
What you're finding, Steve, and what you're referring to is sometimes it's just like cyclical, right? Like, you know, Freud's getting older now. He's had an amazing run. But we need to bring some guys in to take his spot. And Central Banker's been off to a great start. You know, maybe he can do it. I thought Lauben, that was a great sale for Lauben. Maybe he can do it.
Yep.
You know, but yep. And you know, but this happens from time to time. You have, you know, you have a cyclical rotation, and you know, it's time for guys, you know, others to step in, and you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, Joe, I appreciate the business side comments, and most appreciative of the kind and generous thoughts toward Rick Violette, who just it's awkward to say irreplaceable because here you are and doing all and everything that's involved in the job, but certainly the path blazed by Rick Violette will stand on its own merit forever. So I appreciate
it. I only stand upon, I'm sure I'm going to mess up, it's the quote by Newton or whoever, I only see what I see because I get to stand on Rick's shoulders. Well, and his legacy is vast and real, and we all owe him a great debt.
Joe Applebaum, everybody, and J.A. Goods to follow on Twitter. I appreciate it, Joe, and I'll see you in Louisville.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Steve. Always enjoy it.
I appreciate it very much. Joe Applebaum, who, as you can tell, got insight on every aspect and is really nice to have somebody this kind of knowledge and experience, not just involved in the NYTHA role, but stepping forward, and as he acknowledged, it's a full-time job that you don't get paid for. but everybody, for Rick, it was a labor of love, and everybody that puts that time in, Pat Kelly all these years, and so many others, you do it with a desire to help others. We'll take a break. Coming up toward the top of hour three, 11:30, you'll start hearing the fields that have been pre-entered toward Breeders' Cup. Seth Merrow in a little bit and more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm a troubled man, changed by the things I do. True, but it's funny how they all remember.
We're back at the races, about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and information steadily coming from Breeders' Cup, including the official decision on race order. This always a welcome piece. People start to, as Joe Applebaum was telling you, the way he approaches a lot of multi-race wagering decisions. And on Friday, there'll be three non-stake races that lead into race four, the first stake of the weekend, the Street Sense. That is typically, that's a two-year-old stake, Churchill. The Juvenile Turf Sprint will start things. Then the Fillies Turf, Juvenile Fillies Turf, the Juvenile Fillies themselves on the main track, then the Boys Turf, and then the Juvenile to close out the Friday sequence. So Juvenile Turf Sprint, Juvenile Fillies Turf, Juvenile Fillies, Juvenile Turf, Juvenile Dirt is your Saturday lineup. Friday. Saturday, the Cherokee Run will be the second race. And then the first of the nine Saturday races, Filly and Mare Sprint, which seems to very typically be early on the card. Then the Turf Sprint. This is a fairly standard alternate. Alternating main track and turf. So Filly and Mare Sprint as race three, and it'll start a pick five. Or I take that back. Does not start the pick five. Pick five starts in race seven. So race three, Filly and Mare Sprint, then the Turf Sprint, then the Dirt Mile, Filly and Mare Turf, and there is not a pick four comprising those four races. Interesting. There is a pick four that starts with the Cherokee Run. It's Cherokee Run, Filly and Mare Sprint, Turf Sprint, and Dirt Mile would be the first pick four of the day. There's another pick four that starts with the Turf Sprint that would comprise the Turf Sprint, the Dirt Mile, Filly and Mare Turf, and then the Sprint. After the Sprint, the last four of the day, the Mile, the Distaff, the Turf, and the Classic. So, late pick four, Mile, Distaff, Turf, Classic. And right from the start on Saturday, alternating main track turf, main track turf, main track turf, etc. The pick five, the All Breeders' Cup pick five, will be the Sprint, the Mile, the Distaff, the Turf, and the Classic. That's pretty good. And a total of one, two, three, four pick fours on the card. So there you go. I gave you the early, I gave you earlier the 2-day daily doubles. And if you missed that, the Juvenile Fillies hook up with the Distaff. The Juvenile Turf hooks up with the Turf. And the Juvenile hooks up with the Classic. So three 2-day daily doubles. Friday's pick six, pick five, and jackpot super high five may carry over to Saturday. Any pick five carryover from Friday or Saturday will carry to the late pick five on Saturday. So what that means is, what they're saying is, the Friday pick five, which starts with, you know, it's basically all five of the juvenile races. If that five carries, it would go into Saturday's pick five, which starts at race one. And if that pick five were to carry, it would be forced to be distributed in that second pick five. Mandatory, there it is, Saturday's pick six, the late pick five, and Jackpot Super High Five has a mandatory payout in the Classic Saturday. So there have been times when things have carried into the next day when tracks are continuing to run, but that's not the case here. Saturday's pick six, that third of three pick fives, and the super high fives will force out in the Classic. All right. Then here's the minimums. There's those $10 head to heads with the 10% takeout. $2 course win play show, daily double, pick six, dollar exacta, and special 2 day doubles. 50 cent tries, 50 cent pick threes, 50 cent pick fours, 50 cent pick five, and 50 cent super high five, and then the 10 cent super. So there's your betting menu and race order. All right, it's all coming together. And, you know, speaking of which, there was a couple of things I was looking at some international notes, and I saw a couple of things that were good to see in the sprint, which we've been a little, you know, kind of curious about, you know, how many we're going to end up in there. A couple of horses that were entered. Happy Like a Fool. Saw a piece talking about Wesley Ward's 8 entrance. Wesley is entering 6 in the Juvenile Turf Sprint. And then he's got Happy Like a Fool in the sprint, which is good. And D. Wayne Lucas is committed Warriors Club to the sprint. So that boosted the quantity. Well, obviously, you know, there are some decisions that are yet to be made when it comes to Whitmore and Limousine Liberal, but they both seem to be leaning this way to the sprint. And then Promises Fulfilled and Firenze Fire, who seem to be more leaning toward the dirt mile. So if the addition of Happy Like a Fool and Warriors Club, by my own little calculation, I had a total of 7, actually, without Promises Fulfilled and Firenze Fire, but the addition of Warriors Club and Happy Like a Fool, that could bring the sprint to 9, and then whoever else that may have hopped in that we aren't aware of yet. So we'll know more in about a half an hour. Let's take a top of the hour break. When we come back, Seth Merrow, and we'll start to get ready for pre-entries, Breeders' Cup 2018. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible